Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Football Social Daily, your daily Premier League podcast.
Cristiano has caused chaos over the last 2 days, and there could be more to come. Ronaldo has made a splash at Manchester United, but could his career at Old Trafford be going down the drain? More fallout from that explosive interview to come on today's podcast, and you just know we haven't heard the last of it either. Ronaldo will be at the World Cup with Portugal, and the start of the action in Qatar is, can you believe it, just 4 days away. Arsenal go into the break top of the Premier League table, and we've got a Gunners legend joining us later on the show. One of the best English goalkeepers ever, David Seaman, will be telling us how he thinks...
Seaman!
You've rewound to 96 there.
Oh, legend. Proper legend. Yes. My favourite David Seaman memory was the... Sorry to completely derail your podcast intro. The Euro 96 Spain penalty shootout, when he dressed as a packet of refreshers and just saved, I can't remember how many penalties he saved, but it's probably my best England moment, actually, not just my best, say, David Seaman moment. Proper legend.
Well, we will be asking him exactly what his experiences have been at the World Cup. And of course, it's been 20 years since that Ronaldinho goal in 2002. So I might just ask him about that as well. So stay tuned for that one. And of course, every good World Cup needs a good World Cup song. So we'll be hearing from singer-songwriter Dylan James about his pre-tournament tune, Boy's Yard, a little bit later on in the podcast too. Welcome along to Football Social Daily. This is an award-winning podcast. My name's Niall, and I've got Marley Anderson and Jim Salverson here bringing the vibes. How are you doing, boys?
I'm very good, thank you.
You are definitely bringing the vibes. I'm surprised you don't own that David Seaman goalkeeper kit, Jim, because it seems like the sort of number that you would definitely have in your wardrobe.
I think I should get one. I had the blue Umbro goalkeeper's kit. I don't remember what year it was. I think it might have been the year before. It might have been 94, which had the kind of little Umbro pattern all over it, which was equally distasteful. 90s goalkeeper's kits were great.
I remember Chelsea had like a grey and orange kit. That was an away kit, yeah. Not a keeper kit, but that was a shocker.
Ed De Hooy.
Yeah, grey and yellow wasn't it?
Oh, there was another one that was grey and yellow as well.
It was designed to go with jeans.
Was
along,
it?
Yeah, along with the Euro 96, the grey Euro 96 England kit. The idea was that people needed to wear football shirts that went with jeans, so everyone released the grey kit, including that famous Manchester United kit that made players disappear.
Of course, Sir Alex Ferguson was not very happy about that grey kit that was worn against Southampton years ago, and he's probably not very happy about the reaction to this interview that Cristiano Ronaldo has done with Piers Morgan. The interview was conducted last week. Piers Morgan announced on his social media pages on Sunday night that he had done this interview with Ronaldo, and there were certainly some revealing revelations in the chat that he had with United's number seven. You spoke about this on Monday's podcast, lads, but since then, in the 2 days after that, Marley, there's been even more drips and drabs that have been released by Piers Morgan about this interview, and some of the clips we've seen have been doing the rounds where Ronaldo has questioned the owners of Manchester United. He's also suggested that he's felt betrayed by the club and that he doesn't really get on with the manager, Erik ten Hag. These are all things that have really, I guess, thrown his reputation and Manchester United into disrepute. So in terms of what we said on Monday compared to what we know now, 48 hours on, has much changed or has it got worse for Cristiano Ronaldo when it comes to this?
I don't think much has changed, because in terms of the way it's gone, you know, when there's an argument or, you know, something put forward, which is the straw that broke the camel's back sort of thing. It's like, who does it come down on? Like, who comes out of it? Like, who do people side with? And I don't see many other than weirdos on Twitter who have like completely dedicated to Ronaldo sort of accounts. I don't see anyone coming up with a legitimate reason for why Ronaldo's done this interview. And I think everyone just thinks he's out of order, because I don't think he's been badly treated. It doesn't seem like that. I think he obviously thinks differently, but
Yeah,
I don't really know why, because the first thing we ever seen of Ten Hag was in the summer when he was about to start work. The first thing we ever seen was Ronaldo not coming back from training in time. So he was like 3 days late from the summer, and he was like, well, straight away you're getting off on the wrong foot there. And then there's, you know, once the season started, there's different things that happened, but it was such a wide-ranging interview that you sort of think, like, he had points at part of it. Like, the stuff about the infrastructure at Man United is something that isn't a rare thing to have, for people to have a go at. Everyone sort of who's been at Man United in the last 10 years, 15 years, knows that there is work to be done on the infrastructure, the stadium, the facilities and stuff like that. But I think he threw that in to give his argument more credibility. We'll see the full interview tonight and tomorrow as well, when they split it over two parts on some TV channel no one's ever heard of, but Piers Morgan's trying to make relevant because his career's dwindling ever since he walked out on because a weatherman called him a ball bag or whatever it was on ITV. So it was one of those where I think he started off with a vendetta against Ten Hag, and then he's thought, I'll tell you what, we're on for an hour and a half. I can't do an hour and a half on Ten Hag being a divvy. So I'll throw in some stuff that brings people to my side, which is, oh, the chefs are all the same, the food's the same, the facilities are the same.
It's
the
like lockers. He's got a list of everyone he has any contact with at the football club, and he's worked out how to attack each individual one of them and burn those bridges so it's impossible for
including
him to work
Wayne
for them
Rooney
again.
And Gary Neville as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing he hasn't had a go at is the players, actually. And he's been, I guess, because of he could end up playing with them again at a later date, and because of international relationships, he's actually, I mean, we've only seen bits of this interview, you've got to remember as well. We've only seen the full thing yet, so we don't know what's going to come out. But he said the players want the best for the club. That's all he said about the individuals in that club. But as we saw from that Bruno Fernandes video.
Yeah, a little frosty, wasn't it, with him arriving at international duty for Portugal.
It looked it, and you can read a lot into a video like that. But it did look, from the outset, and with the context of the interview, it looked like a frosty reception. But he hasn't personally attacked those individuals, but clearly it's going to damage his status and his relationship with those players in the dressing room.
I think when it comes to the relationship with Ten Hag, there is two sides to every story. And I think that that is so important because, as you say, Marley, we've only seen clips of this interview. The full thing airs later tonight. And of course, we can probably get a more rounded picture once we've seen 50% of that interview in full. But some people will argue that Ten Hag's actually almost protected Ronaldo at times. There are also question marks over, you know, Ronaldo had children that were quite unwell. One of them sadly passed away. And obviously that's a horrible thing for any parent to ever have to go through at any stage in a child's life. So I think that there are things here that need to be treated delicately and carefully. But when it comes to what he said, and as Marley rightly points out, when it comes to the infrastructure at Manchester United, he has made comment about the owners of Manchester United Football Club. And we know that there have been a section of the fan base who have been unhappy with the ownership of Manchester United by the Glazer family in recent years. We've seen protests. We've even seen a game called off a couple of seasons ago where fans ran onto the pitch to air their frustrations. Do you think that they are sincere concerns from Cristiano Ronaldo when it comes to the ownership of the football club? Or is he trying to get his own way, and he knows that by saying something inflammatory about the owners of the football club, it could go down well with a certain section of the fan base and therefore be used as a propellant to get him what he wants, which ultimately, and has been the case since the summer, is a move away from Manchester United to a club that plays Champions League football.
I don't think he's been that calculated with it in terms of attacking the ownership for that reason, partly because I don't think the ownership care enough about what anyone thinks of them to hasten their exit from the football club. I think it's the one thing out of this interview that actually bears any water from what Ronaldo said, because all his attacks on Ten Hag come down to him not being picked. And that's the manager's prerogative not to be picked. But the actual infrastructure of that football club, I think he is someone who has been there from those Alex Ferguson days. He's gone away. He's played for some of the biggest clubs in the world with some of the best facilities. He's seen what Real Madrid have had to do. He's seen what Juventus have had to do to keep themselves at pace with the other contenders for their crowns. And he's come back to United and gone, they've not done it. They've not progressed anything. And we know that's true from all the other stories that have circulated around the facilities and the structure and the back room at Manchester United. So I think that actually bears weight, and it's a genuine grievance that he and the
But is he using that as an excuse for his poor performances this season? Because I get the Ronaldo fans who will be screaming at the podcast now saying, but he scored 18 goals last season. He was Manchester United's top scorer, and without him, they wouldn't have achieved as well as they did achieve. I totally hear those things. Well, his conversion rate when it comes to shots is abysmal. He scored one Premier League goal all season. He's not really started many games. I understand that. But in the time he's had on the pitch, which has been mainly restricted to the Europa League, in all fairness, he's been poor. And Manchester United have looked a better side with Cristiano Ronaldo off the bench as a substitute.
That's true, but is that to do with his performances, or is that to do with the way Ten Hag wants to play football?
It's not because the jacuzzi's not changed in 10 years, is it? That's nothing to do with how Cristiano Ronaldo plays on a Saturday.
The tone of the interview to me doesn't feel particularly woe is me, and this is the reason I've been poor and making excuses. It feels, and as I keep on saying, we've not seen the full thing yet, so we don't know what the full context is. Yeah. But it feels like it's an angry lash out
frustration
at Manchester United.
Yeah.
And it's a way for him to engineer an exit from the club. But I haven't noticed or haven't felt like it was necessarily him making excuses. And ultimately, every player on that pitch has the same circumstances at that football club. So there's no reason that one player's performances should drop in any difference to the other, should it? If that is the reason that someone's playing badly, is it because the cook's making your sausages wrong? But everyone is in the same boat there.
Luke Shaw had an extra pudding in the cafeteria.
Is it not because, like what Wayne Rooney said, and Ronaldo's hit out at Wayne Rooney for these comments? He said that, you know, Ronaldo's nearly 38. Age catches up with everyone. Is that not just a product of that? That's why he's performing poorly. Maybe he's just getting a little bit old. And yes, he might have his reasons for missing pre-season, which I'm sure we'll hear the full extent of later on today. But it's difficult to miss a full pre-season.
Two more years, though. Ronaldo will play.
Well, Ibrahimovic is 40 and he's playing still in Serie A for AC Milan and scoring goals.
But I do think when you're getting older...
And he's just done his ACL and still come back from it as well.
True.
Still on his way back.
True.
But when you're getting older, you want to play every game, don't you? And Ronaldo's always seemed like a player whose heart... look at Gareth Bale at Real Madrid.
Yeah.
It's like... his heart wasn't in it and his performance has dropped. And I wonder if that's a similar scenario with Ronaldo.
I see what you're saying, but Gareth Bale never did an interview. And if we rewind 12 months, almost exactly, we were sat here in this studio talking about an interview that Romelu Lukaku did with Sky Italia whilst he was still a Chelsea player. And he was saying things about moving from Inter to Chelsea and the way things had gone at the start of his return to Chelsea. And he effectively became ostracised. He had to come out and apologise for what he had said. And it didn't end well for him at Stamford Bridge in the end, Marley, did it? And he's got what he wanted, which was a move back to AC Milan, Inter Milan, rather. It's a 2-year loan deal, but it's a permanent deal. Let's face it, Chelsea have had to take a massive loss.
Maybe.
Well,
he's not doing particularly well. I don't think Inter even want him, though.
Well, it's one of those things where, you know, Lukaku did this. Obviously, he's not a global megastar like Cristiano Ronaldo, and he was ostracised. He's moved on. Manchester United have released a statement. They released it yesterday saying that we will await the full extent of the interview, I'm paraphrasing here, before we make a decision or make a comment on what happens next. Now, according to some research that's been done, FIFA do state that Manchester United have grounds to dismiss Cristiano Ronaldo from his duties. This is an unauthorised interview. He said inflammatory things about the football club, the ownership and the management. Do you see a future at Old Trafford for Cristiano Ronaldo, or is that bridges burnt now for him? Do you think he plays again?
No. He's just desperately trying to get to a Champions League club in January. And the quickest way to do that is to either...
self-sabotage.
Yeah, either buy out your contract or get sacked or come to a mutual termination, because, you know, no one's going to pay money for him to get him out of his contract. Even if Man United allowed him to go on it free, I still think there's financial restrictions there that will put top clubs off. And you're talking, what is this? How many teams are in the Champions League? 16 now. So how many of those 16 would be in a position to take him? You'd say maybe 3 tops. And then does he even want to play for the other 13 teams out of them? And maybe, you know, risk going out of the Champions League, for example. Like, if he went to... Bruges, for example, you know, it's a one-off game, basically.
In the summer, we heard reports and rumours that Cristiano Ronaldo wanted to move on from Manchester United to play for a Champions League club. If he does that in January, you're right, it's the last 16. I don't know whether he can play. I don't know the registration rules for the Champions League. That's probably a different rabbit hole that we won't go down. But you're right, there'll only be 16 teams in the competition, several of which have already ruled out signing Ronaldo because of the wages and things like that. So therefore, if his next club is somewhere, let's say, in the United States, or, of course, a few years ago, Jim, people would go to China, wouldn't
they?
Because they
can't go to the United States.
I know, but this is why I'm using it as an example there, or China, or somewhere like that, where the wages
are
significant. Well, this is my point. If he's sabotaging himself here to find a way out of Manchester United, United are currently, I think, in fourth, aren't they? Or fifth. So they've got a good chance of qualifying for the Champions League this season.
Put yourself in Cristiano Ronaldo's shoes for a minute, though. And he has been one of the two best players in the world for the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way in his head he doesn't think, if I'm a free agent in January, one of the biggest clubs in the world will come in for me. That'll be the way he's thinking. That'll be his mentality. And I'll be honest with you, if I'm Manchester United, and there's suggestions in, there's an ESPN report today that says Ten Hag has said he will not play. He's had a meeting with the board and said, Ronaldo will not play for me again at Manchester United. So he's drawn his line.
But if he did pick Ronaldo, does that then compromise Ten Hag's authority as manager?
Yeah, completely. And I think
I think he'd be strong enough to walk away as well.
I think so. I mean, he's made a statement with Ronaldo already, hasn't he, in terms of how he's handled
it. But then he brought him back in and made him captain. So this whole idea that Ten Hag's treated Ronaldo unfairly, which is how Ronaldo, I guess, feels from the demeanour I'm getting from this interview. Like I said, there's two sides to the story.
But if I was Manchester
United, what he did against Spurs was unacceptable. He brought him back in, I think, against Chelsea, was it? Made him captain?
Yeah.
Or against... He brought him in a couple of games later and made him skipper for a game. So it's one of those where... You know, like you say, you have to weigh this up, and it's so difficult to know without seeing the full interview.
But if I was Manchester United, I'd be really tempted to keep him on a contract, let him rot in the reserves, and not play him for 6 months purely out of spite. It's
on £600,000
a hell of an expensive hill to die on. And you've also got to consider, I mean, it's Manchester United are in a difficult financial situation, whatever happens here, because they've either got to get rid of Ronaldo and get his wages off the budget, let him rot in the reserves, and carry on paying it. But in both of those scenarios, they also desperately need to bring in a striker because Manchester United are short up front.
Yeah, Martial can't stay fit.
There are rumours they're linked with Kylian Mbappe as a potentially January transfer target. Kylian Mbappe is not going to be cheap. So they've got a difficult... It's really difficult for Manchester United to manage from here as to how they do it.
You can't put him in the reserves either because the media circus just carries on for another six months.
Well, he wouldn't
doesn't
turn
it?
Up, would he? He'd just go and do his Tevez and go and play golf.
Also with this as well, if what we're seeing in some reports is correct in the fact that United have grounds for dismissal, they won't have to pay out the rest of the contract because of the actions of Cristiano Ronaldo.
Isn't the contract only another 6 months anyway?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, it's not... Well...
So actually, he's
saving a little bit of money.
From January, he can start talking to other clubs abroad for a move in the summer anyway. So, yeah, I mean, this is fascinating. I'm sure we'll talk about it more on the podcast in the next couple
of
days.
The best option for him would be to go to PSG.
Yeah.
Because they're backed by, you know, they can afford him, I think, you would assume, with their endless money. And any owner, particularly the owners there, who wouldn't want to see Messi and Ronaldo in the same team?
Would there be some sort of swap deal on the cards, hence this Mbappe link?
Well, no, because Mbappe wouldn't go on Man United.
No, I know. But I mean, in terms of front-loading that PSG team, to bring Ronaldo in as well, you've got several top stars already in those positions.
Yeah, because I just think, like, it probably sounds stupid now, but I think the logic is there. They would want to pair them together because everyone sort of goes, you know, when we talk Messi versus Ronaldo has dominated the last 15 years, but you talk about it and people sometimes say, what if they played in the same team? 100% they'll be having meetings in Paris now saying, could we get him in January for 6 months? Just for 6 months. That's all you need him for. And then if Messi leaves in the summer, because there's even talk about that, because if Barcelona get the stuff together, Messi never wanted to leave Barcelona. He only left because he had to, because they were down the back of the sofa for pennies to pay people and register new signings. So if Messi ever went back to Barcelona, you've got the new star, the new huge star, the commercial sort of thing of Ronaldo signing, Ronaldo replacing Messi.
And he'd boss it in legal as well.
Probably.
Yeah, he would, yeah.
Yeah.
And just a final one on this, because I'm conscious...
And he's never played. It's the only top league he's never played in.
One of the top five
Germany. But Bayern have already said no, apparently, this week.
There was allegedly a meeting which has been debunked, apparently, between Ronaldo's agent and
Bayern
Munich.
It's hard to get rid of Choupo-Moting when he's done so well.
It's very true. All right, finally then, because the World Cup is around the corner, and soon we'll be hearing about the World Cup and England's chances from an Arsenal legend, David Seaman. He's on the way very shortly. But Cristiano Ronaldo is in the World Cup training camp with Portugal at the moment. Do you think he's going to have an absolutely storming tournament, Jim, off the back of this? Do you think this will be fuel underneath Ronaldo to propel him forward and really give him something to be motivated by?
No.
Do you think it will be the opposite?
I don't think it will cause a distraction. I think it's in Ronaldo's head. This is no different to how it already is. Ronaldo's world is focused purely on Ronaldo. The timing of this announcement is designed to put the focus of every camera on him for the duration of Qatar. And I mean, do you remember the European Championships final where he went off injured halfway through and spent the rest of the tournament bouncing around on the touchline as if he was the manager?
Rest of the game, Eder scored the goal, didn't he? And
it feels like a similar situation. He just wants everyone talking about him and looking about him. He will perform well because it's Cristiano Ronaldo.
What if the people are talking about him and looking at him because he's been sacked by Manchester United? Imagine if Manchester United go, we've decided, having listened to the interview, which will be probably at some point late Thursday or Friday morning, this is the decision we're going to make. We're going to terminate Cristiano Ronaldo's contract. And let's say they release that statement before a Portugal match and he's the captain and he's starting for the World Cup.
I don't think it'll be a distraction, certainly. I mean, the World Cup's a great shop window. So if he does end up being sacked by Manchester United, it's an opportunity to get a new club. Will he play brilliantly? Will he be the star of the tournament? It feels unlikely because his performances have dropped off. But at the same time, will he have a bad tournament? No, because he's Cristiano Ronaldo and he is still one of the world's best players, even at 38.
Well, we will wait and see. There's no way we've heard the last of it, and I'm sure we'll be speaking more about this one on Football Social Daily. It's really a serious story. Cristiano Ronaldo and Manchester United, what happens next? Well, you can have your say. Get in touch on social media. It's at FSDpod on Twitter, and our pinned tweet at the top of that profile is a link to our Telegram chat, which you can click on. You can download the app via the Google Play or the Apple iOS store, and make sure you get the Telegram app and click the link and you'll be thrown straight into the group chat. I'm sure there'll be plenty of discussion about what happens next, not just to do with the Ronaldo situation, but also throughout the upcoming World Cup in Qatar. The first game, Qatar against Ecuador, is on Sunday afternoon. Will you be watching it, Jim?
I'm struggling to get excited by Qatar versus Ecuador.
Marley, but you love a bit of random football. You'll be watching it, no doubt.
Yeah, I'll try.
Who's your favourite Qatari player?
I can't even answer that because I will sound xenophobic because I'll just say a random name and no. I'll try and watch it. I think it's kickoff at like 2 o'clock or something like that.
Couldn't tell you. Of course,
four o'clock on Sunday.
The big one we're looking forward to is Monday at 1 o'clock UK time because it's England against Iran. The tournament will kick off, and I'm sure we'll get some pretext to that match on Friday's episode of Football Social Daily. But coming up next, a former England player, someone who knows exactly what it's like to compete in World Cups, and someone who knows what it's like also to be top of the Premier League with Arsenal. It's because it's Gunners legend David Seaman. Really excited to talk to him. That's on the way next here on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily, your award-winning Premier League podcast. And speaking of winning awards, there aren't many players in English football who have won as much as our next guest. He's a top-flight title winner, he's lifted the FA Cup, and until the next few weeks at least, he's played in more professional football matches than Lionel Messi. Of course, it's Arsenal and England legend David Seaman. Good to speak to you, David. How's things?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No problem. I bet you never thought you'd be above Messi in the statistics, did you?
that's a nice stat.
Yeah, I was looking at the numbers and apparently you played at least 1,053 matches and Messi has played 1,050. So there's three in it.
I'd love the research. I do remember my 1,000 because that was the apparently that was the semi-final against Sheffield United where I made quite a decent save.
Yes,
so.
Yeah, that was an amazing save. Yeah, right behind you off the line. Yeah, brilliant save that was. And what a brilliant player Messi is as well. And speaking of Messi, Argentina no doubt going to be one of the favourites for the World Cup, which is literally right around the corner. So how much are you looking forward to the tournament, David?
I think I'm looking forward to it more now that the last round of Premier League games is over. You know, there's still a couple of like little injury doubts. You know, obviously Maddison went off, but now we can start thinking proper about the World Cup. But the thing is like it's so short because normally we have about 3 or 4 weeks to start getting warmed up for it. But now it's just got like we've got 7 days, and it's going to be strange. You know, it's going to be strange the fact that it's in the winter and in Qatar. But you know, it's a World Cup. You know, so that's all that matters. It's a World Cup. Let's go there. Let's watch it. Let's support England. And, you know, who knows what might happen.
We spoke to one of your old England teammates on the podcast earlier this week, Trevor Stephen, and he said things have changed over the years where nowadays the players are sat by their phones waiting for that phone call to come through from the secretary. Whereas back in the day, it was kind of you'd get pulled into a room or, you know, there'd be a message that was passed on to you that you've been called up into the England squad. But what he did say was that the buzz will probably still be the same for those lads that are in the Qatar squad now. So is that something you agree with, that buzz of being called up for your nation? That will never go away.
Oh, it would never go away, and it was always massive. Yeah, like Trevor says, the club would get to find out first, and then they would notify you. You know, and one of the other strange things that I remembered from the other day was that whenever we used to get our England caps, they weren't like presented to you as they are now and everything. They used to come in the post. I swear to you, to be in a white envelope. You don't know, there's another cap. Put it with the rest of them.
They come one at a time or like one box of loads of caps?
No, it used to come one at a time. Sometimes you would get a cap that would have like quite a few names on it. Like I've got one from the World Cup, for instance, in 2002, and it's got 10 teams on this, but it still counts as 10 caps. But it's all on one cap.
That's disappointing. I would have wanted one for each game. That's how they sell it to you.
Hang on. That's getting an England cap's never disappointing.
Yeah, true. That's very, very true. I should say that. I mean, in all fairness to you, you talk about that World Cup and you were the best goalkeeper in England for a long, long time. So was there ever a point where you were expecting to get called up regularly or is that something you just never took for granted?
No, you always... Yeah, but don't forget, you know, I've got 75 caps and, you know, once you've got round about 30 or 40, but I tell you when it was where you almost expect to get called up is like when after Graham Taylor left, because he left me out of the European squad and Chris Woods and Nigel Martin went. And it wasn't until after that then Terry Venables came in and he came up to me and he went, David, he went, I just want you to know you're my number one. And that for me was brilliant, you know, and I know that this position is mine until I start making a few mistakes. But the confidence boost it gave me was great. You know, so then you almost, it wasn't a case of like expecting to be called up. It's like, it's almost a case of without being too big-headed, it's like expecting to play. Do you know what I mean? You know, you know how to handle your body, you know, and then sometimes there'd be a friendly and they'd say, oh, do you mind sitting this out? And I was okay with that, you know, because I was aware of letting the other guys get some experience. You know, and I think when you look at the situation we've got now with Aaron Ramsdale and Nick Pope, there's not a lot of caps there. There's not a lot of experience. You know, so if anything happens to Jordan, then, you know, the pressure's going to be on whoever gets in. But, yeah, for me, it was just, you know, I just loved playing for England. There's no, you know, and I know, you know, and I've done well and I've made mistakes. But just playing for England and when you retire and you look back, it just makes you feel so, so proud.
Do you think that gives you the determination as well when a manager says you're going to be my number one, that you don't want to let him down? So I guess with Jordan Pickford now, he'll be expecting to start, like you said, but that faith that Gareth's put in him will make him want to work extra hard not to let the manager down.
Yeah, nobody wants to let the manager down, and especially one that's shown that much confidence in you. You know, like with Terry did with me, like with Glenn did, Sven did. You know, it's something that makes you feel so proud, like I say, but, you know, especially with Jordan, you know, he's done so well with England. You look at the semi-finals in the World Cup in Russia, you know, he played brilliant in that tournament. and even in the Euros as well, you know, like to save two penalties in a shootout and end up on the losing team. How unlucky are you? You know, so, you know, but Jordan's been brilliant for England, you know, and especially towards the end of last season with Everton, he made some really big saves to keep them in the Premier League, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jordan Pickford is for me number one, which is quite harsh when you think of how well Nick Pope and Aaron Ramsdale are doing at Newcastle and Arsenal. And we'll come on to your old club Arsenal in a minute, but just going back to the World Cups that you've been in, it's been 20 years since the 2002 tournament. So how do you reflect on that tournament and just generally your World Cup experiences as a whole?
Do you know what? When I looked at the info that you'd sent through and about and I saw that and I was like, oh my word, it's 20 years ago.
Sorry.
I know. And I was like, wow, that time has flown. But yeah, you know, when I look back at World Cups, especially my first one in 98, I've never felt so proud in my life as being a footballer for England. You know, plus I just had Euro 96, which I did pretty decent in that. Mm. But playing in the World Cup for my country, I remember walking out against Tunisia in France. And as we're like starting to line up, I'd got like total body goosebumps. And I was like, oh my God, you know, here I am. I'm a lad from Rotherham. I grew up with nothing. My mum and dad were just hard workers. We didn't have a lot to go around. And here I am playing for my country in a World Cup from Rotherham. And it was just an amazing moment that was strange, you know, because like here I am playing in the World Cup. Yeah, I'm thinking about this.
Yeah.
You know, and it just made me feel so proud. And yeah, you know, that got off to a great start. And you know, it was a shame that we lost out on penalties against Argentina, but then you take that forward to 2002, you know, and we had a good team then. The 98 team was really good. The 2002 team was good. You know, that we just came up against Brazil that was, went a brilliant Brazil when we played them. You know, at 1-1, we were doing okay. Then obviously that's that other Brazilian guy scores. That sounds like Ronaldinho, or is Ronaldinho. you know, and it's... See, it affects me even when I say his name. But, you know, we still had half an hour left and I'm there thinking, you know, like, come on, guys, like, get me out of this, because if we go out 2-1 on that mistake, you know, what's going to happen? And, you know, unfortunately, we didn't get out of it. But, yeah, it's just like I say, it's good experiences and bad experiences.
Yeah, I guess that's football, isn't it? You say
that's goalkeeping.
It's 100%. I mean, you spoke, you know, earlier about the Sheffield United save, which is, you know, like an iconic FA Cup save. But then, as I said before, you've played over 1,000 games. Is that Brazil match the one that people ask you about the most?
Yeah, not so much the match, you know, the goal. You know, people say, oh, and the most asked question is, "Oh, did he mean it?" And I always say, it doesn't matter. It still went in. Still went in from like 35 yards out, you know, on a free kick where, you know, I'm expected to stop that. But, you know, I know he didn't mean it. I know it was a fluke, but it's...
Have
like
you spoken to him? Have you ever caught up with him since then?
Yeah, so I've not really spoken to him because his English is not that good. But we did Soccer Aid and he played for the rest of the world. And I swear to you, right, he got a free kick in the similar position. And I just went over to the top right corner. I'm like, stood under there. I'm like, go on then, try and do it again. Yeah, obviously, no he chance. Didn't.
could have saved the lob for Soccer Aid, couldn't he?
I know, exactly. Yeah, I wish he had. Yeah, but it's what makes me, you know, and even then, you know, in 2002, you know, and as I always say, when a goalkeeper makes a mistake, you look to see how they react. You know, and I reacted in a positive way. We ended up winning I wish it was the World Cup. We won the FA Cup the season afterwards, you know. So, you know, it's what makes me.
Yeah, and they say it's a lonely position. And not just on the pitch, but a lot of people say off the pitch as well, it's quite difficult. So is that something you subscribe to?
Yeah, you have to be a little bit different. But the biggest thing of all is you have to be so mentally tough. Because you know you're going to make mistakes. And like we just said earlier about, it's how you react afterwards. Because if you make that mistake in the first 5 minutes, are you going to be a nervous wreck for the next 85 minutes? Or can you get your game back together and prove, you know, that it's just a one-off? You know, and on the other hand, you can play brilliant for 85 minutes, make a mistake in the last minutes of the game, and that's what gets remembered. But you've just got to be mentally tough. And the hardest thing about being a goalkeeper is if you do make a mistake, you have got to wait until the ball comes near you again. It's not like you can go and affect it out on the field or anything. You know, you have got to wait.
Torture.
Yeah, but then that decision, you know, if you're thinking, right, I've got to go and make a save, or I've got to go and get that cross, and when that cross comes in, if it's not yours, and you still go because you're not fully concentrated, you can make another mistake. Yeah. You know, so it's technical, but it's bits, little bits that I look for in goalkeeping. And yeah, it's how you react afterwards. And, you know, people say that we're crazy, but we're not all crazy. There's just different ways of being a goalkeeper.
Very well put, very well put. And talking of learning from mistakes and adapting to situations, what about Arsenal? Absolutely flying at the moment, David. Top of the Premier League. Officially top at Christmas, because obviously there's no Premier League games now for a few weeks, which means the next one's on Boxing Day. And you know what they often say about teams that are top at Christmas? So how happy are you with the start that Arsenal have made?
Well, it's a little bit different. We've been top at Christmas this time, but the start Arsenal have made has been brilliant. You know, it's and what I'm liking as well is we're seeing a different side to this Arsenal team. That's not panicking, you know, even if it goes a goal down. I went to the Fulham game quite a while ago at the Emirates, and we went 1-0 down quite early on, I think it was, and last season's team might have panicked in that situation, but they didn't. They just kept playing their football, and they ended up winning 2-1. And, you know, and I'm seeing the team now with a lot of confidence, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, have we got a chance? You know, obviously you see Man City, and when I saw the result from the weekend where they got beat at home, I was like, whoa, that's it. We don't even have to beat Wolves and we're still going to be top. But, you know, it just shows you that at some stage, everyone has a little wobble. You know, Arsenal have not had it yet. You know, so, you know, if they can stay away from that wobble or just have a mini wobble, then they've got a great chance.
Can you imagine an England World Cup win and an Arsenal title win? It would be crazy.
I don't think you'd see my podcast for a few weeks because I would be going missing. I'd be partying. I've always said I want to be around when England win a trophy because that's going to be one hell of a party back here in England. And can you imagine that if England do that and then Arsenal win the league? That would be amazing. And Leeds stay up.
Yeah, well, the only thing that could have made it even better would be if Tony Adams had won Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah, but some things are never going to happen.
he's pulled out of Strictly, I saw
he's
this
done,
morning.
Yeah, yeah. He was brilliant. He was so good, you know, because he's so hard. You know, like, I know he gets a lot of stick. He got a lot of stick on social media, but it is so, so hard. You know, I did Dancing on Ice, and the nerves that you feel in that, and on Strictly, I'm sure, is for me, it was the worst I've ever felt for nerves. You know, and right. I've played in World Cups, I've played in Cup Finals.
Is that because you felt in control when you were playing football? Exactly. You knew you were skilled and talented, whereas with totally
I could
different.
Play in front of 60 million people playing football, and it would not bother me whatsoever. But, like, play in front of, like, what is it, about 200 people live in the audience and a few million live on TV, honestly, it makes a difference. You know, you smile, and when you smile, your mouth is that dry, your top lip stays up there, and your legs go to jelly. And I text Tony straight after his first dance, and I says, I bet that's the worst you've ever felt for nerves. And he was like, exactly, goalie. He said, I'd never felt like that before.
Can we expect a Tony Adams exclusive debrief on Seaman Says then in the next few weeks?
There might be one coming up. I need to ask him. He'd probably be too busy though because he'd be all over the place now.
Get him on. Exactly. I mean, speaking of Seaman Says, it's a great podcast and it's been a good chance for you as well to catch up with some of your old teammates. You've spoken to likes of Gazza and, you know, Sol Campbell, and Aaron Ramsdale is the Arsenal keeper at the moment. Is there anything about any of your former teammates that you've spoken to that maybe you've learned that you didn't know?
I think the biggest one was Peter Schmeichel, when I had Peter on. And we were talking about having a good number two. And he was like, that sounds all weird, by the way.
Yeah. Thankfully, you can edit these.
But yeah, me and Peter was talking about having a good backup goalkeeper, you know, and he was like, no, I never wanted a good backup goalkeeper. I didn't want a number two as being really good and putting the pressure on me. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. He said, I wanted to know that when I got injured, I was coming straight back in no matter what. You know, and that shocked me, that, you know, because I felt that sometimes having a good number two pushed me on a little bit more. You know, I had Alex Meninga pushing me, Stuart Taylor, then Richard Wright got bought for a lot of money. And, you know, and that really helped, you know, like, push me on to the next, not to the next level, but it made sure that I didn't get too complacent, you know. So that was a big interest, you know. And then the other one is Robbie Williams. He knows so much about football, it's unreal, you know, and he watches a lot, you know. And when he was out in America, he was saying that, like, they used to get the choice of any 3 o'clock kickoff, and it was brilliant for him.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. Well, I tell you what has been brilliant as well is the Seaman Says podcast. I've really enjoyed listening to those. It's a Listening Dog Media production, and of course it's part of the Sports Social Podcast Network, which means you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. So hit subscribe and you can listen to some of the chats that Dave has had with the likes of Gazza, like I say, what a legend, and
yeah,
Aaron Ramsdale, who's doing brilliantly for Arsenal at the moment. Loads of other great guests as well. David, it's been a pleasure talking to you, mate, and enjoy the World Cup as well.
Yeah, we will. I'm sure we'll enjoy it. Hopefully we enjoy it really, really well, you know, when we get to the final, and hopefully we'll lift that trophy, because that will be epic.
Yeah, I'll see you in May time for an Arsenal-England double party, double trophy party. We'll spot you on top of a bus stop somewhere, David Seaman.
Yeah, a little debrief, and a sober up.
Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily, an award-winning Premier League podcast. But of course, the attention is actually away from the Premier League for now, and eyes turn to the World Cup in Qatar. And although things are a little different for this tournament, it's in the winter and there's been no shortage of controversies, every good World Cup needs a good World Cup song. And thankfully, we got someone with us who's decided to put one together. Singer-songwriter Dylan James is here. How are you doing, Dylan?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, yeah. Looking forward to the World Cup, and not long now.
Not long now, and we'll get a chance to listen to your tune, Boys Yard, in a second. But I thought we'd get it out the way first and foremost. You could have some furniture arriving at any point during this interview, yeah, which kind of puts us on edge a little bit. So what are you actually having delivered?
it's nothing too exciting. It's just a sofa, but moved into a lovely new place in South London, and yeah, looking forward to that coming so I can watch the World Cup on a nice sofa.
Yeah, nice sofa, nice telly, the essentials ahead of a World Cup.
Absolutely. And
what's kind of encouraged you to write this song, Boys Yard, then? Because, you know, kind of listening to it, it almost reflects on your memories of playing football when you were young. And I think when you do think of World Cups, generally, I do anyway, I think back to summers playing in the garden with mates, or out on the street with mates pretending to be Ronaldo or Michael Owen or whoever it might have been. So I guess there may be similar vibes for you when it comes to that.
Yeah, I think the World Cup's different in terms of just football in general. And I think there's always a star. There's always somebody with a special goal. I remember Gazza in the 1990, everybody wanted to sort of be Paul Gascoigne after that. And I think Boys Yard was, I didn't necessarily intend it to write it about a football song, which is, I think, sometimes why these things work. But we were actually in lockdown, and you couldn't leave the house. So we had the backyard.
Yeah.
My boys are both Liverpool fans. And you know, I think we watched Liverpool beat, I can't remember who it was, somebody 4-0, and Bobby Firmino had scored a couple, and they were trying to recreate the goal in the garden, and obviously you couldn't leave the house, so it was great. And I just watched them. The 11-year-old was sort of hitting it so hard into the 9-year-old from probably about 10 yards, but sort of the gimmick around it, you can be a hero in your own backyard, you can score from 40 yards. You know, it just sort of, I just got the guitar and just started writing it, really. And it was, I guess, sort of a bit of nostalgia in terms of when I was younger, you know, thinking about being that hero in your back garden, because you could be a hero then, and you have your dreams. And I guess it's also looking at dreams when you're a kid, because everything's so innocent, and then obviously as you get a bit older, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's classic brotherly love. I used to do that to my brother. He's 5 years younger than me. I used to absolutely pelt balls at him in the garden. Yeah. Good memories, though. I'm sure it made him a stronger lad for it. I like to think so anyway. But in terms of your experiences with football and actually watching England, yeah, am I right in thinking you were at the Euro 2020 final?
I was, yeah.
Where England played Italy. And that was obviously a disappointing day overall. But it must have been an amazing experience to be at Wembley for that.
It was a great experience at Wembley. I mean, the only thing I'd say going up to the game, it was pretty aggressive, actually, and sort of going into that stadium. It didn't feel maybe what it should have felt, but it was exciting. Everybody was sort of really pumped for the game. But yeah, I was hoping we would obviously win it, but we didn't. But I think that was the longest walk back on Wembley Way ever after we lost on penalties. But yeah, it was a great experience, and it's great to have us in the final.
And bringing it back to Boys Yard, in the video, there's a special England shirt in the video. Will you tell us a little bit about that? And were you wearing that shirt to Wembley for the final?
I was wearing that shirt.
I thought you might have been.
But I got hit by a flare. So you can see in the video, there's a little burn hole. So I thought I'd stick it in the video because it had the experience of the Euro. Euros. So yeah, that's genuinely what happened. My mate said to me, "You're on fire," and I said, "Okay."
Yeah, that's.
But I didn't have another shirt to take off, so I had to wear that one for the game.
It's not ideal, is it? You either go bare chested like those Newcastle fans that you always see on the TV, or you just plough through with a flaming shirt with a hole in it. And talking of the music video, parts of it were filmed at a local football club. Also there was footage used in it from sort of all around the world. So why was that important to you to have the visuals looking like that?
For me, it's like when you say Boys Yard, obviously we wrote it in the UK in lockdown. But, you know, we think about footballers, dreamers, you know, a lot of them are not playing with any shoes. I went to Bali recently. Mm. There's a lot of sort of they have their backyards are really important. They grow everything in their backyard, you know, whether it be veg, the chickens, everything's there, and they have these bamboo sticks for football posts, and I was watching everywhere, and that sort of kind of gave me inspiration for the video. So, you know, it's about kids with not a lot, you know, but football can still be their dream. And I think even if you relate it back to the sort of cages in Peckham, where there's a lot of big footballers have come from that, you know, they live in estates, and you know, you look at that sort of kind of where kids can release what they want to, because when they're on that football pitch, all their troubles go away. And I think, you know, that is a global thing. We wanted to bring the stock footage in, really, in terms of making sure that we could show that and represent, you know, what the song was about, really.
Yeah, and how important is music during a tournament, particularly when people are trying to get behind a specific nation and you only need to listen to how Three Lions has kind of captured the imagination of England fans over the last, well, 20-odd years now. And then Sweet Caroline was obviously what was played out at Wembley during those England victories in the Euros that you were at. So how important do you think music is? How big of a role does it play when it comes to these tournaments?
I think I think music's a big role across anything, really. I think it gives people a great sense of, you know, euphoria, and it allows people to come together. And I think with Sweet Caroline, when you listen to that, when you're in the stadium before the game in the final, you know, everyone is singing it. And I don't think it was written about a football song, but it's certainly...
it's been adopted.
Know, gives people that sense of togetherness. And Three Lions was the same with Euro 96. And, you know, we don't know where this song's going to go, but I certainly think it can give people, you know, real sense of togetherness, and it brings the kids as well into it, and adults thinking about what they were like when they were a kid and having their dreams as well.
Yeah, like you say, I mean, these songs are going to kind of peak back up again, aren't they? Three Lions and World in Motion, you always get it around the World Cup when these songs make a re-emergence. But what's the best World Cup song for you? Do you have a particular favourite? Because we were speaking about this on the podcast the other day, and we seem to remember even for the 2010 World Cup, there are some quite significant ones. There was one by Shakira that became quite popular. So is there any particular favourite that you've got from World Cup songs over the years?
I have to be honest with you, it's Three Lions. Yeah, I think I was a big fan of the Lightning Seeds as well.
Yes.
Great band. And so, yeah, I think that, and also Badil and Skinner, I used to watch their thing on TV. So that together, I thought they pulled that off. I think it was a bit of a tongue-in-cheek, but it was a good indie sort of kind of anthem, really.
Yeah, because people think that, you know, particularly people from other countries think that when England fans say it's coming home, that they're serious, when actually there's that element of sarcasm that only the English sense of humour can convey. And talking of it's coming home, how do you think England will do in this World Cup in Qatar? Because the first group game is on Monday afternoon against Iran, and then it's the United States, and then it's Wales. So do you see England getting through the group? Do you fancy England to go deep into the tournament like they did in Russia?
I think it's mixed sort of feelings at the moment for England. They've obviously not done great going into the World Cup. We've got a great squad, great team. I'm glad Maddison got in because I'm a big fan of his. I mean, I think it's like the World Cup, anyone can do well if you sort of get through that group, and then anything can happen. And I think we've got as good chance as anyone. You know, I think as a Englishman, you know, I'm always a believer. We have kind of crazy hopes that we're going to win it all the time. But you never know. I mean, obviously, Qatar is going to be a different place, you know, might suit some of the South Americans. But yeah, I think we've got a good chance.
Okay, well, why not big ourselves up ahead of the tournament and get ourselves a little bit in the mood? Here's a little clip from Boys Yard, Dylan's new single. That's the tune. You can get it now. It was out earlier this month, and you can find it on all the usual platforms, so make sure you go and check it out. Also check out the video on YouTube as well. But before I let you go, Dylan, you talk about scoring the winner, being the hero from 40 yards. Who was your hero growing up? Who was the person you imitated in the back garden when you were younger?
I'm a big Liverpool fan, but I guess if I was going to pick a midfielder, and didn't who's well at England, and I watched his documentary recently, Glenn Hoddle.
Yes.
I thought he was, you know, very underrated for an England player. But I guess, you know, thinking back what he was like, it was unbelievable. But look, there's some great footballers. Gerrard was a massive, massive inspiration to me as well. So, yeah, I guess I do like a good creative midfielder.
The single's out now, Boys Yard, World Cup song. Make sure you get it in your ears. And I hope you enjoy the World Cup as well, mate. Great to speak to you.
I will do. Just very quickly, I just want to say thanks to the team. I've got a great team that helped me plug this. And the video, Da Vinci, a good friend of mine who did the video. But just to let you know, on Sky Sports News, before the USA game in the morning. So if anybody wants to switch in and watch that, I'll be playing the song acoustically.
We'll be tuning in. Nice one, Dylan. Great to speak to you.
All the best. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye. All right, well, that was Dylan James, whose new tune, Boys Yard, is out just in time for the World Cup. And he says that Steven Gerrard was his idol in the back garden as he pretended to score from 40 yards, Jim. So what was yours? Julian Dix? Someone like that?
You know, Will Carling was my idol growing up.
What, a rugby player?
I was much more into rugby than I was football, because my dad was. So
was it a drop goal from 40 yards and not a... not a screamer into the top
into bed
corner.
With Princess Diana.
What about you, Marley?
Allegedly.
If it's Alan Shearer, we're ending the podcast immediately.
What, and you expect me not to say Shearer? Of course. Of course it was.
It's boring answer.
Shearer.
Boring.
Absolutely volley against boring. Everton. Volley against Villa. Scoring against the Mackhams. Everything. Everything. run around the playground with my hand in the air. As the only Newcastle fan in Cumbria, because everyone supported Man United.
Mine was Matty Taylor. Used to love scoring bodies. Wow. As Matty Taylor. Wasn't even left-footed. Yeah. Anyway, you can check out that song, Boys Yard. It's available now, the video as well, which features Dylan's shirt with a hole in it, as he told us, after he was hit by a flare during the Euro final. But will England be in the World Cup final? We'll wait and find out. And of course, we'll keep you right up to date as the World Cup approaches here on Football Social Daily. So hit subscribe, and that way you won't miss it. More podcasts on the way soon. But from myself, Marley and Jim, that is it. And we'll catch you next time.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.